All right, Alexander, let's talk about the military situation in Ukraine on the front lines. What is happening in Zaporozhye? What is happening in Pokrovsk, Kupiansk? A lot of areas to discuss and to break down. And a military situation that is causing a lot of panic and alarm in the collective West, in the United States, as well as in Europe, where the EU leaders met in Copenhagen. And according to the statements from Viktor Orban, the European leaders, they want war with Russia.
Yes.
They want to go to war with Russia, maybe even as soon as 2026, but definitely by 2027. Once again, this is Viktor Orban's assessment of things. Yes. And he's there. He's at the table talking to them and discussing things with them. So that's the situation in Europe.
Yes, it is. They're getting more hysterical and more frightened. When people become frightened, they become angry. When they become angry, they make decisions that are bad decisions. In fact, increasingly crazy decisions. And because decisions made in anger are by definition always bad decisions. I mean, in this kind of situation, you need a cool head and you need calm and you need to think things through and ask yourself what can work and what cannot. What can work, what might work, in theory, if they were ever to try to do it, is diplomatic engagement. But of course, that is something they categorically refuse to do. That is the Europeans. The Americans, the Trump administration, has attempted diplomatic engagement, but it never really did so with any true sense of good faith behind it, because what it was trying to do was trying to coerce the Russians to agree to freeze the conflict on American terms, which is, again, something that the Russians were never going to do, because the United States never wanted to respond to Russian concerns about what the Russians call the root causes of the conflict, which are issues of Russian security. So given that they won't engage in serious diplomatic engagement, and given that they're losing the war, and given that they have no actual means to lose the war, to reverse that, you can understand why they're becoming frightened and why they're becoming angry and why they're talking about war and why there is constant, relentless, incessant talk of war, and why minor events, which once upon a time would have been disregarded, like, you know, a few Russian decoy drones drifting onto Polish territory, or Russian fighter jets flying from Karelia to Kaliningrad, why these events are being stoked up and talked about in this kind of hysterical way that we are seeing at the moment. And what is, of course, driving this is the fact that the war is being lost. Now, I have come to the view that, well, for a long, long time, obviously, that the Ukrainians have been deceiving their allies about the true military situation. Over the last few weeks, we saw this narrative suddenly appear in the West, in the United States. Trump himself appeared to adopt it, that the Ukrainians were actually winning. Now, what I think happened, and this brings us back directly to the military situation, is that the Ukrainians were misrepresenting to the Americans and to the Europeans what was happening northeast of Pokrovsk. If you remember, northeast of Pokrovsk, near a town called Dobropilia, the Russians, back in August, carried out an unexpected breakthrough and captured a string of villages, and you got this sort of, it looks like a sort of spear, that a two-pointed spear pointing deep into the Ukrainian defenses. So Zelensky and Sirsky, as the Russians intended, transferred all the best brigades of the Ukrainian army, including pretty much all the best Azov brigades that are left, to try to throw the Russians back. And an intense encounter battle has played out in this area between the Russians and the Ukrainians throughout late August and throughout the whole of September. And the Ukrainians have been telling people, giving all kinds of optimistic stories about how well they were doing. They were claiming to have recaptured all sorts of places. They were claiming that they'd encircled the Russians in this area of breakthrough, that they'd created at least three cauldrons of Russian troops there. They implied that this was a massive disaster for the Russians and that Ukraine was winning this battle northeast of Pokrovsk. What has happened over the last couple of days, maybe the last week, is that it's become absolutely clear that these Ukrainian claims were simply wrong. They might not have been complete and outright lies in the sense that the Ukrainians did carry out attacks, counterattacks in these places, but it was wrong to claim that any of these counterattacks were succeeding. And it is increasingly looking as if these counterattacks not only were not succeeding, but they are now failing, and that the Russians are back on the attack in this particular area. And in the meantime, even as all this fighting has been going on, northeast of Pokrovsk, Pokrovsk itself is being lost. Now, about 3 weeks ago, Russian media outlets began to claim that the Russians were making big advances inside Pokrovsk. It's a, you know, fairly big place. This is all being discounted, always being ignored. Now it looks as if all of those reports are true. The Ukrainians inside Pokrovsk itself are saying that all exits and entry points to Pokrovsk are closed, that the only way Ukrainian soldiers can enter Pokrovsk is on foot and in very small groups, which means that supplies cannot be sent to the Ukrainian garrison in Pokrovsk anymore, and that there is an operational crisis there. And we have discussed in many programs how pivotal Pokrovsk is to the entire defense line that the Ukrainians have created with this row of cities, Konstantinovka, which is already itself now under severe pressure, and Slavyansk and Kramatorsk further north. And elsewhere, again, along this defense line, for the Ukrainians, things go from bad to worse. We have the Ukrainians now finally admitting, again, what the Russians have been saying, which is that the Ukrainian garrison in Kupiansk is essentially surrounded. Again, you can only exit and enter Kupiansk on foot and in small groups. And it's likely that at some point we're going to see an attempted Ukrainian breakout there because they are surrounded and suffering heavy losses. The Russians appear to be close to completing fully the encirclement now of the fortified town of Siversk, which is a bit to the east, and they're very close to Liman, Kupiansk, Siversk, Liman. You put the northern part of the defense line, the town of Slavyansk, under pressure, possible encirclement. If Pokrovsk is lost, the whole area is encircled. And the Russian general staff has now made it fairly clear that, in fact, the main target is not even Slavyansk now. It is Kramatorsk, the city, the biggest town in this cluster of towns, that once Pokrovsk, Konstantinovka fall, the main attack will be on Kramatorsk. If Kramatorsk collapses, defenses collapse, and, you know, it's a big place, it'll take up time, but if the defenses there collapse, the entire Ukrainian defense line in Donbass collapses. And as we've discussed in many, many programs, going all the way back to February, March 2022, if the Ukrainians lose Donbass, the entire east of Ukraine, east of the Dnieper, becomes undefendable as well. So that is one operational crisis for the Ukrainians, where they've been claiming success. It now looks like they've been experiencing failure. And further south in Zaporozhye region, the Russians continue their remorseless advance, kilometer by kilometer, towards the Dnieper River, and there doesn't seem to be anything that the Ukrainians can do to stop them. Since they started back in April, they seem to have covered around half the ground. So, you know, it's an incremental advance, but it isn't as slow as some people are trying to say.
So you're saying that the decisions from the Trump White House, the panic from the European Union to go to war is a byproduct of information that they're getting from Ukraine, the fake information that Ukraine is feeding them. This is not the first time that this has happened, that Ukraine has given the collective West ridiculous information about the situation on the front lines, and the West has actually believed in what Ukraine was telling them. That also goes for the Western media as well, which believes everything that Ukraine tells them. How incompetent do you have to be to fall for this over and over again if you're the Trump administration or the European Union? I won't say the UK, because I actually believe that the UK is in on it with Ukraine in promoting this fake information. I think it's the UK and Ukraine that are in the business of promoting the fake information that is coming from the front lines and then getting it out to at least the United States. Maybe they get it out to Europe as well, but who knows? How dumb do you have to be to actually believe this over and over again?
You have to be very dumb, but the people who are, I think, bear a very heavy share of responsibility for this are the senior army generals in the Pentagon. I mean, General Kellogg, obviously, was one of them, and he's obviously still in contact with them. He says that General Keane, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, is backing him in these military assessments, and I am sure that that is true. We've seen this also with people like General Cavoli, and we had it before with, you know, the other various generals that were there. We remember the Wiesbaden headquarters and the march on the Black Sea, and that they were going to capture Crimea and the Sea of Azov and all of that, and the Krinky operation, all of these things. But, you know, these people are so invested in this war that they will simply not let it go. And we've had this pattern with the senior members. It's important always to say this, the very senior uniformed members of the American military. They did the same in Vietnam. They were giving incredibly over-optimistic, rosy pictures about their progress in Vietnam to the White House in the 60s, as I, by the way, can just remember. We saw that in Afghanistan, where they were doing exactly the same. And now, of course, they're doing the same with Ukraine. By the way, we've had another example, in my opinion, of how a fake story is now starting to crash to earth. The Ukrainians have been repeatedly claiming for years now that they have enormous success shooting down Russian missiles, that they're able to shoot down Russian ballistic missiles and Russian hypersonic missiles and Russian cruise missiles. And we have the endless demands from the Ukrainians about more and more Patriots, even though Ukrainian military officials at one point were contradicting what Zelensky and co. were saying, and were saying that Patriot missiles cannot actually shoot down Russian hypersonic missiles and all of that. Anyway, there's a big article, even as we're making this program, on the Financial Times. In fact, it is the lead article there, which finally admits that Patriot missiles are unable to shoot down most Russian ballistic missiles and most Russian cruise missiles and hypersonic missiles. In fact, most, it admits, even the cruise missiles are mostly getting through. And of course, this is all explained by new updates and modifications that supposedly the Russians have carried out, all to try to maintain the pretense that previously the Ukrainians were telling the truth. But nobody who has been following the war in the sky with any attention has ever believed the Ukrainian claims about numbers of missiles that they've been shooting down. And as I said, we now have that admission. But will it change anything? Probably not, because, you know, they'll all say that it's all because, you know, the Russians have done something to the guidance systems of the ballistic missiles, and all we need to do is to adjust ours, and somehow the situation can be turned around. So let's go on supplying Ukraine with more and more Patriot missiles, because, well, ultimately those will be successful. It's the same story again and again. It's, as I said, I remember it from Vietnam, just. I absolutely remember it from Afghanistan. We're seeing it play out in Ukraine again now.
Oh, the collective West political elite and the mainstream media, they absolutely bought into the fantasy that Russia fired 100 missiles into Ukraine and Ukraine shot down 120, right? Yeah. They absolutely bought into that, bought into it, the political class in the collective West, as well as the mainstream media, which shows you how smart they are. But the European Union, for them, Project Ukraine has been a very successful power and money grab. Very successful power and money grab. Once again, not my words, Viktor Orban's words. He said in an interview the other day that Project Ukraine, before anything else, is a resource grab. It's a money grab. And that's what it's really all about for Europe. This is what Viktor Orban said about Project Ukraine. So what are the chances that as they see this cash cow, this money grab, cash cow that has been making much of the European elite incredibly wealthy, as they see this thing crumble, what are the chances that they really are going to panic and go to war with Russia in order to try and preserve this project Ukraine for them? It seems very likely now that Europe, if especially if you go off of what Orban is hearing at the meetings in Copenhagen, that Europe is going to go to war, or is going to try to go to war with Russia by 2026, 2027. I don't know if they have the military or the resources or the manpower to do such a thing, but I imagine that the goal would be to try and pull in the United States or all of NATO to get this conflict with Russia. And they could probably pull in Trump. Trump has proven to be a very weak president, especially when it comes to the Europeans, extremely weak when it comes to the Europeans. So what are your thoughts there?
Well, a few things to say about this. I mean, Medvedev, who's the Russian vice chair of the Security Council, he actually commented about this. He said that, yes, the Europeans talk about war, but he doesn't think in the end that they will do it because they're too weak. And as he puts it, they lack energy. In other words, that Europe doesn't have the mental and psychological drive to really make the decision to go to war in that way. And if you listen to a bizarre speech that Radek Sikorski, the Polish foreign minister, gave, and he very much is at the center of all this, hysteria. Sikorski said that, you know, Europe is already at war with Russia, but it isn't actually a real war. It's not a war like we've seen. It's a war which isn't quite a war. So I think that what the Europeans probably want to do is that they want to create a war psychosis, a sense of hysteria and anger and panic. And it serves three purposes. Firstly, it keeps the United States involved, which remains a major priority because they need the US in Europe, as you pointed out many times, to keep the money flow going and to keep the machine of the European Union and NATO spinning. Without it, it can't function. So that is one thing. They need the hysteria of the war in order to be able to do things that up to now they've been nervous of doing, like seizing Russian assets. That's another thing that they want to do. They also want to use the war to increase arms spending, which, to be very clear, is all about, you know, subsidizing various parts of the MIC, but also ultimately themselves. And they also want to continue what Orban absolutely correctly describes as this massive power grab that has happened in Europe ever since the start of the special military operation, with this enormous centralization in the European Commission, which increasingly has been making the key political decisions. And notice that Ursula now is talking about converting the European Union into an outright security bloc and military alliance. So, you know, this is what I think they want to do. They don't want to actually enter into a real full kinetic war with the Russians, for which they are unprepared. But they want, nonetheless, all the advantages of a war without the what they see as the advantages of the war, without the actual fighting. And, you know, they can do all the other things, digital ID cards, which have now been accepted in Switzerland and which Starmer is trying to bring into Britain, more controls on information and the spread of information, more regulation, more spying on people, all that kind of thing. So this is what I think their objective is. As Medvedev correctly said, this is a dangerous game, because especially given the hysteria that underpins this, it can tip over into the outright kinetic war that we all have to be concerned and worry about. So that this is what I think they want to do. This is how they see it. And they probably are not yet fully willing to accept or tell each other what Orban is pointing out to them, that the war in Ukraine is lost and that Russia has won. He's repeated that point again. And they're not prepared even to consider what none other than General Zaluzhny, remember him, he was the former Ukrainian military commander. He's just published a really fascinating and very, very carefully written piece. He doesn't want to find himself in trouble, but he's published a very long piece about the state of the war, which actually provides a fairly coherent explanation of the Russian strategy of aggressive attrition and admits it is working. So, I mean, Zaluzhny also says that Ukraine is losing. You have to drill into his words carefully to see that, but that is what he's saying. But they don't really want to admit publicly that that is so.
Yeah, the fear that the psychosis will actually turn into something kinetic. I think that's what Medvedev is getting at.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and it is very real. And of course, when we get long-range missile strikes into Russia, we're closer to that point than we have ever been. Bear in mind that the Russians now have started deploying the Oreshnik system. I have heard that up to 140 of these missiles have now been produced. And I have also heard that there are other missiles even more advanced or even more dangerous than the Oreshnik itself, which are coming into production in Russia. So, you know, the means to fight this kinetic war are certainly there. And if they're ever used, one doesn't want to even contemplate the implications of that. It's a very, very dangerous game. And people in Europe, the leaderships in Europe, are blind to the risks of it.
All right. We will end the video there, theduran.locals.com. We are on X and Rumble and Telegram. Go to the Durant Shop, pick up some merch like what we are wearing in this video update. There's a link in the description box down below. Take care.